Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome once again. Tonight we're going to do Q&A with Jay here. There's Joel. Joel, you nervous tonight?
Well, of course I am.
You're nervous, old man. You know,
Not anymore.
Well, you know, it's funny you talk about that. You know, once you've done this enough times, being nervous is not really an issue with me. I may sound nervous, but I'm really not. But when I used to go to these races, and I'd ride with one of the guys who was on the favorite list, you know, one of the top 10 runners. He goes, "I'm so nervous about this race." I go, "I'm not." Then I realized later, yeah, I had no chance at winning, so I had nothing to be nervous about. So I was just going to go run the race and have a little fun and get done with it. But yeah, he was nervous. Ah! Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Joe.
All right.
Get some questions
for me. We
got
another couple of pages of questions.
Uh-oh. Yep. Yeah, you know, I caught Joel one day. I was coming in. Joel, ask Google these questions. And I mean, it was so funny listening to him ask Google all these questions. It's come up with all kinds of interesting answers for him. But some of these I'm going to have to say ask Google because I don't know. But, go ahead, ask a question.
Why did multiple currencies develop? Currencies like yens, dollars, pounds.
Okay, well, you got the British pound, the French franc, the German mark, the American dollar, the Australian dollar, the Canadian dollar. You got the Swiss franc. You got the Chinese yuan. You got the Japanese yen. You got the Hong Kong dollar. I mean, you go to Wall Street Journal, you pick up, you flip to the back of it where it's got all the statistics. You got a long list of currencies. Now, first of all, you got to ask the question, why do we have currencies at all? Because originally it was, okay, tell you what, if you'll clean the house for me, I'll go mow your yard. Okay? That's a good trade, right?
Not for me, because I don't like cleaning the house.
All right. But thing is, you may do my... I don't need you to mow my yard. I don't need... Or, get this. You clean my house, and I'll bake you a cake. I can bake my own cake just fine. Can you find another way to pay me? Well, I don't know of anything else to do but bake cakes. Tell you what. Why don't you bake a cake for Jane over there? And Jane's like, okay, that's great. And now what am I want you can go, while I'm baking you a cake, you can go mow their yard. Okay, so we got a three-way trade here. Eventually it got to the point where, tell you what, is there just something you can give me instead of trading? So I do this job for you. You give me something in return. So they developed, well, it started off with gold and silver. It eventually went to coins. By the time Jesus was around, we had Roman coins. So you did it for a denarii, or you did it for a shekel. Yet, you know, the Jewish system had shekels. The Roman system had denarii. And you'd work for coins. And then you could go use those coins to go buy food or go buy clothes. Because guess what? I'm doing this job. I really don't need, I don't need your service in return. What I need is some food. I'm hungry. Well, originally we all planted crops. We all ate our own food. But I've got all these crops in return. I can give those away, trade it for something else. Well, we trade it for food. Now, why do we have all kinds of currencies out there? Well, we have all kinds of countries. Because each country developed their own currency to trade within their country. Then we developed the global international community. much as you may like or dislike globalism, that's a whole different subject for a whole nother day. But now I am, you know, I'm working with American dollars here. I buy stuff with American dollars. I work with American dollars, but I'm buying this stuff from China that needs yuan to pay for it. Because guess what? They pay their workers in yuan. They don't pay their workers in dollars. So we developed a international rate of exchange so we can exchange $1 for, actually it's like, it's $5.15 or 5 yuan and 45 fun for $1. So you got a 5-to-1 ratio, okay?
Okay.
And so if you buy, pay something for 10 yuan, when you go to China, you're actually paying $2 for it. So that's how that worked. And I mean, but it gets, the history of currencies is real complicated. And you could go study that for hours and hours and not come up with anything. We got a follow-up, Joel?
So it's like if two people are busy measuring wood for their houses. One person measures wood on their arm length, while the other person measures wood on their body length. That's like the currency. Some people do
not really.
Tiny bits and others do bigger bits.
Well, yeah, basically that. But the rate of exchange is traded. It's like stocks. Stock, when you go buy stocks, it's based on the value of that company. So there's 100 shares of a particular stock out there in a particular company. You buy one share for X amount of dollars. Now the company becomes more valuable, so that the price of that share goes up in price. Or they have a bankruptcy, the value, it becomes valueless, the price of it goes down. Okay? Up and down, up and down, up and down. Same thing with currencies. As I start buying more stuff from China, China is going to increase their the value of the yuan, because now they're more valuable than the dollar, because you were doing more yuan. And therefore, the price of that product over there is going to go up because you're paying more for the yuan.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Next question.
Okay.
Does the Bible say anything about teenagers? The
Teenage years. Now, I'm going to punt on this one because you probably can go study the book of Proverbs and find a lot on it, but I really have not done a study looking for teenagers. We don't know how old David was when he fought Goliath. We don't know how old he was when he fought the lion and the bear. We presume he was a teenager, but the Bible talks about children and it talks about adults, and it really doesn't talk about the teenage years. It may talk about a little bit about becoming an adult, but really there is very little distinction. You're either a son or you're a father. Okay.
Okay.
Now the Jewish system, they have a bar mitzvah at age 13. When you've done your bar mitzvah, you're an adult. They don't have really teenagers. Okay. Next question.
What is the history of Halloween? Like, this is just a short.
You want the short version or you want the long version?
Short version, longer version.
Okay, Halloween was actually started in England by the Druids. They believed that one night a year that the dead would come forth and haunt people. To fool them, you had to dress up and disguise yourself, so they would think you're one of them.
That's where the phrase, if you can't beat them, join them, came from?
Yeah, it's something like that. No, not necessarily, but trick-or-treating, you know, that was a, yeah, you either treated the spirits or you tricked them. Yeah, there are whole YouTube videos out there on it. Doc Severinsen, not Severinsen, Doc Marquis has some pretty good videos on the subject, and I'd recommend you go watch those. And it talks about jack-o'-lanterns and where they come from, where the dressing up, the trick-or-treating. It's a very scary subject when you talk about how the Druids did it. You know, we just have fun with it today, but back then it was serious business. And bobbing for apples was not a fun activity, especially since the apples were in boiling water back then.
Ow.
Yeah, don't bob for apples in boiling water. I don't recommend it ever.
Okay.
All right, Joel, next question. Get up here where you can speak into the microphone.
What are churches, the building churches, used for when church, like after church and everybody goes home?
that is a million-dollar question that most churches need to ask themselves. You know, what is this building when it's not a church? I mean, football stadiums have to ask that question. When it's not, there's not a football game, what do we use it for? Oh, okay, we got concerts we can do. We can use it for, FEMA can use it for rescuing people. Church is the same way. You know, during the week, I've been to association, homeowners association meetings that were held in churches. You know, my church, we have a school there. It's not run by the church, but there is a school in the church. You know, they rent the church for it. English as a second language is taught on one night of the week in the church. You know, when the mission field comes to your church, comes to your neighborhood, what do you do with it? Yeah, go teach them English, okay? and that's a whole nother subject. But yeah, you got all those that you can look at, play with. But next question:
if I were to set my cell phone down and then when I come back, I pick up another cell phone that I thought was mine because it looks just like mine, and I kept it. Would that be stealing if I don't ever realize that it's not mine?
Okay. If you picked up something, if you didn't think you were stealing. Now, legally under the law, that is not stealing. If you pick up something you thought it was yours, but it wasn't, that is legally not stealing. Now, once you've discovered it's not your phone, now we have an ethical issue. Now you got to find your real phone and get this one back to the person that had it. If you do not make that attempt, then it becomes stealing. Okay?
Okay.
Yeah, an act done in innocence is not a crime. Now, is it sin? Well, what's sin? Well, sin is missing the mark. Yeah, it is a sin for you to pick up somebody else's phone. But is it a crime? Is it a felony? Is it a, what's the Bible call them? It's not that. It's nothing higher than a sin, okay? If I harbor... You know, the Bible says in my heart. I'm trying to remember what it is right off. But if I harbor that in my heart, is that sin? If I harbor iniquity, there it is. If I harbor iniquity in my heart, God will not hear my prayer. Once you've kept the phone and not tried to return it, then it's a sin. If I leave the store without paying for something, that's not a crime. Once I've discovered I have it and I do not bring it back to either give it back to the store or actually buy it and pay for it, then it's a crime. Okay?
Okay. Next question?
Okay, next question.
Next question. What is the extent that the word gambling can be used for? Like, what is the definition of gambling?
Definition of gambling. Gambling is actually, it's a game of chance where you put something on the line with something out of your control, and you can get more in return. In a way, stock market is gambling. But that, in a way, that is not gambling because it's business. That's how companies raise money, is you buy stock, and hopefully the company grows and you get a return of something better. That's the goal. But it's a gamble as to whether or not that's going to happen, especially since one out of every two or three out of every 10 businesses, I don't have the statistics, fail. Companies fail left and right. You look at over half the airlines that have ever flown in America are not flying right now because something happened. Oh, yeah, they made money for a little bit, but no, not too long. But it's a gamble. You know, a new company starts up, you buy stock in it, it's a gamble. If they have not been 3 weeks, if they have not been in, the company has not been in existence for 3 years, it's a gamble as to whether or not you buy stock in them. Now, playing poker, obviously, that's gambling. Playing the lottery, that's gambling. Because you're putting money out there on the line with it. Odds are you're not going to get it back. But if you do get it back, it'll be a big return. You play slot machine. I remember once coming into Reno and, yeah, I dropped a quarter into a slot machine. Well, I got two back. I go, well, this one's not mine. Stuck it in, pulled the handle again. Got $5 back this time. Okay, well, I bought Cokes and went on. Stop. All right. Is gambling a sin? Well, you can search the scriptures and determine whether or not that's a sin, but yeah, Proverbs looks down on gambling as a primary means of income. You know, you don't want to use that as your income. You want to work for a living?
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Work for it. Work.
Well, but what if I were an expert arm wrestler and I saw this person who I look at them and I say they have puny arms, I think I can beat them. And I say, I'll give you $5 if I can beat you in arm wrestling, and you have to give me $5 if not. Would that be considered gambling?
That is considered gambling, but the odds are in your favor, okay? You got to know the odds. And a lot of times you're doing statistics to figure out what the odds are. You know, it's the same equation of if I put money in Oracle. Well, Oracle's been in business for 30 years doing databases. Internet's booming right now. Most of the databases on the internet are Oracle-based. So you know they're making lots of money right now. So am I gambling if I buy stock in Oracle? Not really. But it still is a gamble to how much more I'm going to make. The same thing with that arm wrestling. Now, that said, Pete Rose got himself in trouble because he gambled on the games he was playing. He would go put a bet down on a baseball game that he was going to play. And the league found out he was doing that. And they not only barred him from the league, they won't let him do anything with baseball ever again. He should be in the Hall of Fame right now, but he's not because he did this gambling. Yeah, where that becomes a problem, though, Joel, is when I go in there and place the bet, and I'm not betting on me to win, I'm betting on me to lose.
Okay.
If I'm betting on me to lose, guess what I'm going to do? I'm not going to do my best, am I?
No.
That's where Pete Rose got in trouble.
Oh.
Okay.
Ah.
See, I'm going to go bet on my team to lose this baseball game. Now, am I going to do my best? Am I going to help my teammates become their best?
Oh.
No way.
You want to win that bet.
You want to win the bet, yes. I make more money if I lose the game than if I win it. So guess what? I'm not going to play my best. You're always going to be in trouble when you do that. Next question.
Next question is actually a continuation of the last question. Is lots from the Bible, you know, casting lots, a form of gambling? Because the Bible, tells them to cast lots to find out such and such.
Okay. Casting a lot in the Bible, there is a form of that that is gambling, a form that's not. The lottery is casting a lot. I'm going to put my money into a big pool, hoping that my numbers come up so I win the pool. Okay? That's lottery. Now, when it comes to gambling, the Bible, there's several places where the lots were used not as a tool for playing. You know, the Bible says the lot is cast, but God controls the lot. So what they do a lot of times, it's drawing straws is what they do. The winner of the lottery in the Bible a lot of times is who God has picked to do the job. For instance, Jonah and the whale. When the ship started going back and forth, they drew lots to see who was the person that was actually causing the storm. And guess who won? Jonah. And Jonah stepped forward and said, "Yes, it is me." Who controlled the lot? God controlled it. The other place that is mentioned is in the case of Matthias, as far as who was going to be the next apostle once Judas died. When Judas died, they had to have a 12th apostle. So they took all the people that had actually been with Jesus from day one up to the crucifixion and put them in a lottery. And the winner of that one was Matthias. And Matthias, winning the lottery, he became the 12th apostle.
Okay.
Now, God, in the end, vetoed that. You never heard about Matthias after that. In the end, God vetoed that lot and said, Paul is that 12th apostle. God actually picked Paul, but it was later that he picked him. Okay.
Just quick follow-up question. This wasn't in my notes. What if me and all my friends put a penny in a pile and then we all go swimming and whoever can stay afloat the longest gets all the pennies?
That's called professional sports.
It's called professional sports. Not gambling.
No, it's not gambling. That's professional sports. You know, that's what happens when you go to a bicycle race, go to NASCAR race. There are millions of dollars on the line for the drivers when they go race in NASCAR. The winner's going to get $1 million for that race. But guess what? You got to win the race. So they're all competing as hard as they can to get that $1 million. Same thing with a golf tournament. Yeah, that's professional sports. Well, Joel, tell you what. We are at you got another gambling question?
Nope.
Okay, so let's go ahead and do commercial break.
Commercial break!
Yay!
Let's go!
All right, you're listening to Q&A with Jay right here on Eagles Nest Broadcasting.
Double sixes! Can't hit me now.
Let's see.
Oops, Snake eyes, I get to go backwards. Hitting you.
Hey, you can't go backwards in backgammon.
Sure you can. It's in the rules. If a player rolls snake
Let
eyes.
Let me see. You wrote that in there.
So it's still in the rule book.
Rules. They provide standards for people to live by.
Oh, yeah? Well, if I roll a 4, I get to knock your pieces on the floor.
There are standards God wrote for us in the Bible.
Oh, yeah? And if I roll a 5, I get to kick you in the foot.
Ow! Okay, I get to hit you on the head.
Wait.
What?
You didn't roll the dice yet.
Oh, yeah. 9! Ow!
As we walk away from God's standards and create our own rules, we create confusion.
Ow!
Seven!
If things aren't working out for you in your life, give the Bible a chance.
Let's play something less violent.
Hockey?
My rules.
Another message from Lifeline Productions, the comic strip of radio, at lifelinepro.com.
Wow, what an appropriate commercial for what we just were talking about there. Yeah, rolling the dice. That's a good form of gambling. All right, Joel, you back in here yet?
Yeah, I'm back.
All right. Give it to me. What we got next?
Why is man so convinced that there are aliens?
Why are we convinced that there are aliens? Well, we know that there are entities out there that are not of this world. We got UFOs, we got poltergeists, we got all kinds of crazy stuff going on out there, and it is not human beings that is doing it. So we got several explanations. One, a ghost, some dead person come back in just a spirit form to do it. The other thing is, who taught us how to do some of the stuff we're doing? We can't have figured this out on my own. I had to go to school to learn it. And since I went to school to learn it, somebody had to teach my teacher. Somebody had to teach his teacher. Somebody had to teach his teacher. And it comes back to who taught the original person how to do it. Now, the Bible does talk about certain people as being the father of music and all who play musical instruments, the father of metallurgy, the father of this, the father of that. You look at that in Genesis, I think chapter 4, maybe chapter 5. When it talks about the line of Cain and the line of Cain. It talks about the various people who originally did that particular skill that we had to learn, but who taught them? They were very smart people, so they figured it out on their own probably. But a lot of people are convinced that some alien actually taught them. Now with the Roswell incident, people are convinced that that was an alien. They're convinced that we got aliens in the White House trying to influence our government and what they're doing. Why are they all convinced? Well, because shows like Late Night in the Midlands, shows like Coast to Coast with George Norrie, and various tabloids, the Weekly World News has pictures of aliens doing things. It's just, I don't know how much of that is fun and how much of that is true, but in reality, we probably, if you look at the Book of Enoch, we have the group people known as the Watchers who came to Earth and actually taught everybody what skills. And guess who those really are? They're the fallen angels. So we have fallen angels that are doing the stuff that is credited to aliens. And if you want to get all into that, then you've got L.A. Marzulli is probably the master at that one. Do his Watcher series, and you'll see what he's talking about there. All right, next question, Joel.
Next question. What are some differences between Greeks and Romans?
Greeks and Romans. Different than Greeks and Romans. One's Latin and one's Greek. Okay. The Greeks were the original European conquerors of the world. Alexander the Great, he moved into Asia. He did not try to conquer Europe at all. He went into Asia. Ephesus was his first conquest. That's why Ephesus was considered the first city of Asia. And then he marched to Babylon and and on around the world to the various different, all the way to India. He went down to Egypt. He went to India. Alexander the Great conquered the world. He was an Egyptian. He was not Egyptian. He was Macedonian, but he used the Greeks to conquer the world. And the Greeks set up their language kind of like English is today. The Greek language, the Greek culture was propagated throughout the world at that time. So that's why our Bible is in Greek. Okay? The original writings of our Bible was in Greek because at that point in time, Hebrew was only spoken of in the temple. Greek was the Aramaic and Greek were the languages of the people. Aramaic came from Babylon. But then who were the Romans? Romans was the next peninsula down the Mediterranean from Greece. Rome is in the middle of Italy, and they conquered from their center point. They conquered up to Israel. They didn't conquer much past Israel. They got Egypt, and everything in the Mediterranean became Roman. They conquered everything there. They conquered all the way to England. So they focused on Europe. They did Asia with Asia Minor. They got Israel. Now, the Parthian Empire emerged in the east, which is where we get the wise men from the Parthians. And that became a competing competing system to a competing system to the Roman system. So everybody in the world at that particular time was either Roman or Parthian.
Okay, makes sense.
All right.
Makes sense.
Or at least they're being the known world. I mean, the Asians had their thing going. They're totally different.
People say the Bible contradicts itself. Can you please tell me why they say that and how they can that statement can be contradicted?
That's an interesting. So you can there are whole books written on that subject, looking at individual places where apparent contradictions happen. Now a lot of it is because two people wrote the same story and they told it a little differently. They said one thing in one book, said another thing in another book, and because Mark does not agree with Matthew, does not agree with Luke, does not agree with John on how a certain event happened, they say it's contradicting. Not necessarily. They're just written from different angles. Deuteronomy will say it one way, where Exodus says it another way. Are they contradicting? No, they're just complementing. There are no contradictions in the Bible, despite what the liberal professors say. A lot of the contradictions in the Bible is because we've got this text out there called the here's another thing. You got the Masoretic. Just look at the Old Testament. You got the Masoretic text, and then you got the Septuagint. There is so many contradictions between the two versions. If you're reading from one, it says one thing. If you're reading from the other, it says something else. Interestingly enough, when Jesus quotes the Old Testament, guess what he's quoting from?
The
Septuagint. So if there's a New Testament, Old Testament verse in the New Testament, and it seems to be different from what it says in your King James Bible or whatever version you're reading, if there seems to be a difference, that's because they use the Masoretic text to interpret it versus the Septuagint in the New Testament.
So that's like if I quoted a verse in like NIV and then everybody said that I wasn't actually quoting the Bible because it's not KJV.
Correct. Yeah. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son that whosoever believeth in him shall not perish but have everlasting life. That's the King James. The NIV says, for God so loved the world that he gave his one and only son.
Ooh, which is it? His begotten son or his one and only son?
Well, that seems to be that's a contradiction. Wait a minute. It's the same Bible. They're quoting from the same place. They just said it differently. Okay?
Okay.
What's the difference? I mean, you've got some staunch King James only that are going to point out that that is going to rob the Bible of its meaning by saying one and only. Well, guess what? Jesus was the one and only begotten of the Father. Okay?
Nodding.
Got it. All right.
Okay, the next question is kind of like we're doing all these deep and serious questions, but then the next one is, why are there so many words for roads, highways, lanes, drives, streets?
Okay, why do I park on the driveway, drive on the parkway?
Why do I drive? Like,
why do I live on Magnolia Lane and you live on Judson Road?
Yeah, basically.
Okay. Well, there's different types of roads out there. You know, just like you got different types of blood vessels. You know, some are arteries, some are veins, some are capillaries. And depending on the size of the road, the use of the road, they may call it something different. But a lot of times it's just whoever created the road. You know, yeah, do I want to call this a drive? Do I want to call this a lane? Do I want to call this a
street?
Do I want to call this a road? You know, 12th Street, well, that's a pretty long street if you take 12th Street through town. Now, if I go on Magnolia Lane, that is a very short street with a cul-de-sac at the end of it. Now, I go over here on Judson Road. Judson Road is a four-lane road, but lots of traffic. It's a major artery through the town. Everybody drives it to work. It's a big road. Okay?
Okay.
So just the use of it will determine what you're going to call it.
So, after Babel, more languages form. How did more languages form after Babel?
That's the million-dollar question. That's one of those questions that when I get to heaven, I want to ask God, how did you confuse languages? Because we all understood each other before now. But when we get to heaven, guess what?
We won't. I don't mean like at Babel. I mean after.
After Babel.
Babel.
When we get to heaven, guess what? When I talk to that Chinese person, I'm going to understand them perfectly, right?
Mm-hmm.
When I talk to that Hebrew person, I'm going to understand them perfectly, right?
Correct.
When I speak to that African, I'm going to understand him perfectly, right?
See.
Why?
Because God unconfused languages.
Okay. Now, one of the speculations, this is a speculation. This is not God said so, okay? This is speculation. This is my opinion. Don't write me and say, you're all wrong. Okay. But mental telepathy seems to be one way that we can all communicate with each other, and we will be able to communicate through the mind. And I'm thinking that in Babel, what happened was that mind communication was broken. Therefore, what does it say about people's attitude in the book of Joshua? Not Joshua, book of Judges. They all became what? They all did what was right in their own eyes, right?
Mm-hmm.
If we all spoke what was right in our own thoughts, how would we speak? Would I be able to speak in a way that you understand it? Probably not. Because you look at the difference between Spanish and English, okay? In English, I have a large mocha frappe. In Spanish, I have a frappe mocha grande.
Grande.
Yeah, okay. I put the noun first, followed by the adjectives in Spanish. In English, I put the adjectives first, followed by the noun. You know how confusing that is to a Mexican to hear the adjectives first?
Confusing to me. And I'm trying to.
Because it's going to be large. It's going to be mocha. What's it going to be, though? Where in Spanish, I know it's going to be a frappe. Okay, now tell me about the frappe.
It's
going to be large.
And it's a mocha.
No, well, it's going to be mocha, and it's going to be big. All right? They reverse the words. Okay, just that little bit is enough to confuse languages. Now, I may call it I may call it chocolate in English, but you call it a mocha. You call it mocha. I call it chocolate in English. You call it mocha in Spanish.
Okay.
And if I don't know my vocabulary is not there with you, see, I've had to learn this. Now, you even look at the Romance languages. Out of Rome, Latin was the language of Rome. But when the Roman Empire broke up, we had Italian, we had French, we had Spanish, we had Portuguese, we had Romanian. All came from Latin. They're all based on Latin. But we decided to do it a little differently. So I say muy poquito in Spanish. I say estoy in Spanish, where I would say estou in Portuguese. Okay?
Okay.
Just a little bit different. In French, I would say, I'd even use something, you know, kind of nasal it and estou, or something like that.
Okay.
Somebody will write me and tell me how to put it properly in French, but but it's still the same group of languages. They just decided to pronounce it differently and spell it differently and all that. All right. One more question.
I actually have a couple.
You got a couple more. Okay, we got time.
We got
a couple more.
How does deodorant work?
Ask Google. Next question.
How does it differ from antiperspirant?
Well, the difference between deodorant and antiperspirant, deodorant just covers up the smell. Antiperspirant actually stops the wetness from getting all over the underside of your shirt. That's a big difference. But how does it work? I don't know.
So
there's essential oils involved in it. For those of you who are against essential oils, who think that essential oils are stupid, talk to Procter & Gamble. Talk to all the companies that make deodorant. Talk to the companies that make the Icy Hot and those kind of medicine. That's all essential oils. They just mixed it in a different way and then sold it to you.
So it's like if I had a hole in the bottom of my cup, and deodorant puts a thing on the bottom of the cup so that it can't fall out. Antiperspirant fixes the cup.
So, kind of, yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, deodorant's kind of a filter, so it gets rid of the smell that you would put off antiperspirant, your underside of the shirt should not be wet at all when you wear deodorant.
Okay, next question.
Yeah.
What is the history of giants? And also, let me put this in here, especially butterflies.
Especially butterflies?
Especially giant butterflies.
Giant butterflies. Well, when you look at the fossil record, you notice that most of your animals were much bigger in the past. Now, that's not what your evolutionist is going to tell you. Why do we have giant tigers, saber-toothed tigers? Why do we have huge woolly mammoths when we got smaller elephants today? Why do we have the huge sharks in the fossil record? Well, the thing was in the past, when people lived to be 1,000 years old, they grew a lot bigger. We talked about this last week, with the, we had the more oxygen in the air, so therefore we could grow bigger. We could fly bigger birds. Bigger birds could fly in the air. A lot of things were a lot different. I could run and not grow weary because there was so much oxygen in the air. Your VO2 max is going to make a huge difference as to how far you're going to run. But when you look at the fossil record, you see everything was huge. That's why everything was bigger. But what you're specifically asking about is Genesis chapter 6, where they said there was giants in the land in those days.
Mm-hmm.
And afterwards, when the sons of man married the daughters of men married the sons of God, and they became Nephilim, or giants, men of old, men of renown. A lot of your myths, Hercules, Atlas, all these were, their fathers were a god, mothers were human. These were all Nephilim. These were all giants. These are all titans, for those of you who are fans of the Tennessee Titans. These were the titans. That's another word for them. But they developed into a race of people that were big. And you follow the trail of history. You look at Joshua when he conquered the land. He fought Og, king of Bashan. They were saying we were small, we're grasshoppers in the sight. The spies came back with a report, we're grasshoppers. We had Og, king of Bashan, who was 15 foot tall. We had Goliath at 10 foot tall. He had five brothers. Bible records there how those were, they were killed. We look at even Native American history. We talk about a tribe of giants that came, that were here. Six fingers. Well, it records that Goliath's family had six fingers. Or Goliath's dad had six fingers. In fact, that's why when you say hi to somebody, you wave your hand. Look, I got five fingers. I've got five fingers. I don't have six. You look at, what was that movie? Princess Bride. The guy had the six-fingered giant that they had to kill. You got all that. Goliath was the last recorded one in the Bible. The Bible also says it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be the coming of the Son of Man. It was in the days of Lot. So shall it be in the days of, what does that mean? I don't know. Is there a return of the Nephilim? Maybe. L.A. Marzulli has been following the idea of the Nephilim are the group of people we now know as Bigfoot or Sasquatch. Is that true? I don't know. We're pursuing it. We haven't come up with any solutions on that. But that's a group, by the way, that speaks in uses mind control to speak to each other. They don't speak in audible terms. They use mind control. And they have spoken to people with mind control.
Next question. Explain global warming.
Explain global warming. Well, the Earth is getting warmer and warmer, and it's actually gone up about a degree. Yeah, the whole thing started back in the 1990s. Al Gore made a movie called Uncommon Truth or something like that, where Undeniable Truth, where he was showing how the oceans were warming, everything was getting warmer, and as a result of this, the oceans would rise, which we really haven't seen happen, but the oceans would rise, we would be too warm, the glaciers would melt. Glaciers have been melting ever since the last ice age, which was right after the flood. Okay.
Okay.
It's going to happen. We only have about 200 years of pictures of the glaciers. And so we don't know how long those glaciers have been up there. And how much it has melted. You know, even in Europe, they don't have pictures of from the 1700s as to what those glaciers look like. So what's going on with, you know, how much are they melting? How much is, that's a different issue. But what they're using this for is they're trying to find another way to tax us with carbon emissions taxing. Once you reduce your carbon footprint, the problem with that is if we reduce our carbon footprint, then we reduce the number of trees. If we reduce the number of trees, then we're not going to be able to create enough oxygen for us to breathe. So that goes back to the alien question. Why are they doing this? Are they trying to change the atmosphere so that the aliens can come? Okay, scary thought.
Okay.
All right, one last question, Joel.
Is this the last question?
Yes, this is the last question. Is that all you got? Really, is this the last question? That's the last question. We're going to end it on that, Joel. Oh, man. I do read over these questions before we start, but I don't do the research. That's why I punted on a few of those questions. But there's a lot of research you can do on any one of those questions. If you want to do the research, come back and who are the giants? I mean, look at L.A. Marzulli. L.A. Marzulli has a lot of answers. But he'll tell you he still has a lot of questions. And
hey, maybe that should be our ending line. But he still has a lot of questions.
Yeah. All right. Well, Joel, we'll see you next time, either here, there, or in the air.
I'm still